welcome to Experience Talks, where wisdom flows and legacy is created. I'm Dr. Connie Corley. Today we honor the legacy of the founder of Experience Talks, Bobby Zeno, whose spirit still lives on in the inspiration he offered to so many of us in his lifetime. Our guests today, Ed Bacon and Mark Nepo, offer to us their own wisdom as we ponder resilience in the face of loss. And they help us give new meaning to our lives as we heal through their sharing of stories. Mark Nepo and Ed Bacon are both authors and orators who have guided many in person as well as on audio programs through their books and as featured guests on Oprah's Super Soul Sunday series. Ed Bacon and Mark Nepo, welcome to KPFK.
Thank you. It's great to be with both of you.
Yes.
Same here. Same here. Very happy to be with you.
Wonderful opportunity. So today on the show, we wanted to talk about something that's important, and that's the aspect of life experience involving navigating change. One of the biggest life changes is losing someone who's been a major part of one's life. Mark and Ed, you've both lost a parent in recent years, and like many of us in our middle to later years of life, such a loss is inevitable. So I'd like to ask each of you, first of all, to reflect on what does it take to navigate grief in the face of loss? Who'd like to start?
You go ahead, Mark.
Okay, yeah. Well, you know, I think, and first off to start, that I think it's a really important topic, and, you know, I'm sure Ed will agree that none of us have any answers. We're just comparing notes.
Yes.
And I think it's an important conversation to have. You know, I just losing my father, and also just recently lost Susan's mom, who I was also very close to. And I think like everything else in life, it requires an open heart. You know, there's nowhere to go but right into the face of love and loss. And I think that humbly we're transformed by the loss. There's a, you know, nobody likes this. It doesn't always feel great. But I would say, you know, one paradox that has touched me and taught me again and again is that somehow when the heart breaks, the tears that come out of us water the break. And then what has seen the light of day grows because of the tears that water it. I don't know how that works, but I know it does.
That's quite a metaphor, Ed.
Oh, it's a gorgeous metaphor. Mark is so poetic. I love it. I agree. There's no map that you can follow. There are some notes that I've kind of been reflecting on. My mother died a little more than a year ago. And then recently I've lost five mentors. It's just amazing. They all happen to be men in their 70s, 80s, and 90s. And were so very important to my unfolding and my flowering into the human being that I am. And it was very important to me to participate in the rituals, the funerals or the celebrations or the Shiva, sitting Shiva. And one was a rabbi, one was an imam. Being with the other people who were grieving was so important to me, and being in their rituals was very important to me. And then in each case, I tried to provide a little bit of solitude on either side, just so I could feel. And I think that in part is what Mark is talking about in terms of letting your heart lead you and watering the break in your heart. It was really very important to me to listen and be in a learner position. What does this mean for my windshields to be taken away from me and to feel so exposed now to the vicissitudes of life without these mentors, sages, kind of protecting me and processing this stuff for me?
You know, and I also feel that, you know, in the face of loss and grief, something that I believe deeply in is really magnified, and that is the paradox of of our heart and our sensitivity. That I, you know, I so firmly believe that our heart is the strongest muscle we have, and that it's really underneath everything unbreakable. And yet, you know, when it's working, we are so sensitive that what we go through feels unbearable.
Mm-hmm.
But time and again, you know, that's when the heart is, when I'm feeling unbearable is when it's actually at its strongest and working the most. And that's a hard one to kind of embrace.
So it's almost as if just the things that we think we can't bear are the experiences that show us how much we can navigate in our lives.
Well, I don't know about, for me, navigate. I think that I'm rearranged.
Mm.
You know, I mean, with these losses, I know for me, I wonder how you would view this, Ed. You know, that I feel like I don't know that I'll ever get over these losses, but I feel like the landscape has changed, and I have to discover what the geography is now. It's different. It's not the same. And so where I walked, that part of the mountain is gone. But now there's a different view because that part of the mountain is gone. So how do I go on and discover what the new landscape is without these guideposts and these men, you know, as you said, Ed, mentors and loved ones and people who've shown us the way.
I agree. I think there's an element of vocation in here as well. All of us, let me speak for myself, have lived with my vocation expecting these people to be around, to be available physically, to have a conversation with or an email transaction with, or to go and hear them speak. To pick up the phone and talk with my mother. And now I have to integrate their physical loss with my vocation and ask the question, what does this mean now for this chapter of my calling to be who I am in the world? And that takes some patience. It takes a lot of patience. And I do want to underscore the importance of Mark's talking about the power and durability of the heart and the strength of the heart to lead you, because that's what's trustworthy about this reintegration process.
Trusting, that's an important concept.
It's absolutely essential. I mean, trust in my mind is what keeps me hopeful and keeps me out of the world of despair. You know, I touch despair from time to time, and it touches me. And yet, my feet always land in an arena or a pool of hope. And I think it has to do with the fact that I trust that the future is open and is positive and is alluring and an adventure.
Mm.
And, you know, I also feel that that trust is important. And I feel like I'm coming to believe and see that, you know, part of the rough ride of being human is that we arrive with an innate trust. Mm. And, of course, the things we go through jar us into questioning that trust. And so I've come to believe that part of our very personal spiritual practice is to develop this a ritual and a skill set for how do we restore our trust when it's shaken, because it will be shaken.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of how we grow. So how do we do that? How do we keep on restoring our trust?
That is one of the core life assignments. For me, it's an oscillation between solitude and mindfulness and meditation on the one hand, and being in community, being a community of people who are also on the journey of healing. Because this is about whole making and being healed, And my experience with my own faith community as having that healing impulse at our center is so bolstering and fortifying.
Connie, I wanted to share a story about something that I learned from being with my father toward the end of his life.
And, yes, please.
Because I think it speaks to me as it's opening a different kind of understanding of resilience. So when I was with my father, and I think you'll both recognize this kind of moment, and anyone who's listening will too, that, you know, my father had four strokes and he had kind of a slow avalanche to his death over months, almost a year. And I had a lot of alone time with him when I would visit. My brother really did all the heavy lifting, and I kind of fell in love with him all over again, watching how he cared for my father on a daily basis. But I was there, and I was feeding my father applesauce, and I was so completely concentrating on how I was putting the spoon in his mouth. I wanted it to be smooth. I didn't want to disrupt him I was just completely there. And as we did this several times, all of a sudden I had fallen into this moment where I felt that I was in the moment of every son or daughter who ever fed a dying parent applesauce. And this moment has stayed with me, because what I feel I've discovered from this moment, again, not from my head, but from just showing up with an open heart, that when I can feel what is mine to feel to the bottom of my personality, then I suddenly touch into the well of all personalities. And now I'm not alone. Now I felt the beauty, the moment, the heartache, the peace of feeding my father. And I was suddenly in a community, like you were saying, and across time, a mysterious community. And to me, that moment when I was so thoroughly in what I was feeling that I touched into all feeling, that to me is like the beginning of resilience.
That's a beautiful story, Mark. And I think two things that I'm struck by right now. One is the power of story, and you're a consummate storyteller, as is Ed. And Ed tells his stories in many different ways, including his book, The 8 Habits of Love, Overcome Fear and Transform Your Life. And there are many stories in that book. And of course, Mark, in the many books that you've written, most recently, The Endless Practice, Becoming Who You Were Born to Be. I'm struck with both the power of telling the stories, but also being the listener. And Mark also has a book on listening. Ed, I wanted to ask you, as someone who, in the formal capacity as a rector of an Episcopal church, how do you see this nature of community compared to what you describe with Mark? And I've been so privileged to have participation in both communities with Mark, and workshops and listening to his audio programs from Sounds True and so on, and also being able to hear wonderful speakers at All Saints Church and also just be part of services. So Ed, how do you look at these different venues and see where it fits into the context of what people need right now in our contemporary times, especially dealing with these very deep issues we've been discussing?
Yeah, I'm very taken right now with, or what's in my mind right now, two responses. One has to do with healing. Mm-hmm. There's so much work, really amazing work, that has taken place in just the last 30 years on trauma and also being raised with an insecure kind of base in love, and how neither of those is a period. Both can be a comma in your life to the degree that we are willing to work on having a new narrative about our lives, a secure narrative that puts the trauma or the insecurity into a context of a person who has, as Mark was referring to in terms of Native American work, that all of us have a part to contribute to the entire whole. And to the degree that we can re-tell our own story that doesn't negate the negative, but includes and transcends the negative, then we are more secure. And that's what I think community does. It helps us. I'm constantly reworking my own narrative and retelling my story. The other dynamic that I want to invoke has to do with evolution, that the cosmos is expanding, and it's doing so in an awesome way and in a luminous way, and that our lives, when we understand that our lives themselves are expanding, even when we go into death, that our physical makeup, though decomposes, recomposes into the expanding cosmos. You know, we have within us, in our bones and in our organs, the cells and the dust of what happened 14 billion years ago. And that is ongoing. And so to tell stories in a community of trust is a way for that evolution and that expansion to continue.
Wow. Mark, your thoughts about story. And speaking of narratives, you've revisited and shared with millions of people in many languages stories about your cancer journey, for example.
Well, I think, you know, story, you know, Muriel Rukeyser, who was a wonderful poet of my father's generation, but she had a great line in a poem. She said, say it, the universe is not made up of atoms, but stories.
Yes.
And of course, the universe is physically made up of atoms. But what she was saying is that stories are the molecules, the very fundamental way that wisdom is carried and that love is transmitted. And you know, before we had universities and degree programs and certificates and licensing, you know, Indigenous people, stories were time capsules that carried the quandaries of living, and they were passed on and said, okay, this is as far as we got with it. What do you think? And then stories would evolve over it. They just wouldn't be repeated. They would actually, like you know, a game of spiritual telephone, where you keep whispering in a person's ear, and then it keeps changing. They keep growing. And I think that, you know, one of the things that's so powerful about is that stories need to be told until we can understand what they have to say to us. And so often, and this goes back, you know, years ago in a former marriage, my former in-laws were farmers, and I knew them for many years, wonderful people. And when my former father-in-law died, he was 86, and his wife, my former mother-in-law, my former wife and I were no longer married, but I was living in Michigan. I went back to see her, and we spent like 2 days together. And the whole first day, she kept telling me over and over and over the moment she found her husband in his overalls on his way out to the barn. And at first I thought, oh, she's in her 80s and maybe she doesn't remember, she told me. And then I thought, how dare I? I was in my late 30s at the time, and I didn't know what it was like to have lived with a partner for 60-some-odd years. And I realized she was rehearsing her grief, and that the story where it had too much meaning to be digested in one telling. And so she had to tell it over and over and over until she could begin to glimpse the meaning of what just happened to her. And I realized after that that this is really what the Rime of the Ancient Mariner is about. This is what so many characters in world literature and in fables are about, in telling stories over and over and over. And so we're wedded to our stories, and as Ed suggested, we need to be wedded to them, not to repeat them, but so that they can evolve.
Yes, yes, right.
I really agree. You've reminded me of my 8 years with my psychiatrist. I was in psychotherapy in my early 30s for 8 years, and my psychiatrist oftentimes would tell me a story that he had told me a year or two before, and then a year or two before that. And in our own faith community and religious communities, you hear scriptural stories told over and over and over again. They have different meanings every time you tell them, and then you do forget. I mean, one of our propensities is to forget, and we need to have our forgetfulness reversed. So stories are, I think Rukeyser is right. Stories keep the universe alive and keep it growing. And we all live in a field. We may be atoms, but I think just as importantly, we are all a part of one electromagnetic force field. And the stories we tell really do impact others. I was recently at a concert with Arlo Guthrie celebrating the 50th anniversary of Alice's Restaurant.
Oh, wow.
He's telling the story of his father and how every time we revisit a place or revisit a song, we leave a part of our energy at that place or in that song. And then he went on to say, and that song then has energy, and it communicates with the other side of the world. So he led us in singing This Land Is Your Land. And another song that his father had written, and he had set the words to music about This Is My Peace. And he said, in our singing it, we are going to be giving it energy, and it is going to be impacting people in Russia and China and other parts of the world. And so for us to feel, for us to understand that we are all in one field, we are one, and that the stories we tell and the energy we give to the stories that we give in the retelling really has an impact for hope, I think, and healing for somebody so far away.
That's such a beautiful analogy, yes.
And you know, and this ties into what you were saying earlier, Ed, about changing our narrative or allowing our narrative to unfold. And I think that this goes back to the open heart, that you know, there's two ways that we all tell our own stories. One is that we keep repeating, we stay faithful to the historical script, you know, almost as, and in that way we're movie directors, you know, we unconsciously make sure that we're in the hero's role or the victim's role or whatever it might be. But when we keep engaging the story as it's alive with an open heart, then suddenly when I'm telling it, I might feel when I get to the ending that I've told 30 times, I'm sick of this ending. I want it to change. And the courage is to actually say that when we're telling it. To say, you know, I've told this story so many times, but I don't really know where it goes now. Because then it's a live song. It's a live story. And we feel it inside.
Yeah.
But then we have that conflict of, are we going to, wait a minute, I know how I'm supposed to end this story. Maybe I should do that, and then I'll think about the other later. Well,
yeah.
we always have that choice. and we get repeated chances to let the story unfold.
Yeah, I you're reminding me of something I learned from one of my colleagues. She had been to a conference and had heard that you could tell your story three ways, one as a hero, one as a victim, and one as a learner. And to retell our stories as a learner, that we're still, I'm still learning about my story and from my story. And my story, of course, is not over. And also, it's a part of the universe's story. So that's a, I think, a very energizing, non-boring way to look at your own story and the
repetitiveness
of it.
You know, I think we could go on like this for a long time, but we're going to wrap this part of our conversation today, and I hope that each of you and collectively we can have you back. Reverend Ed Bacon from All Saints Church in Pasadena, Mark Nepo, who belongs to the world, author, philosopher, poet, and gifted speaker, and both of you are. Thank you for sharing your stories, for being on Experience Talks. You epitomize what this show is all about.
Thanks, Mark and Connie.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you both. It's great to do this together.
For more on Reverend Ed Bacon and Mark Nepo, our guests today on Experience Talks, go to our website, experiencetalks.org. We thank our guests, our producers, our founder, and our listeners.